You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 535. We've got a packed house tonight. John Gentile. We've got a packed house tonight. A lot of people here. First of all, we've got Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet, what's happening? What's going on? How are you tonight?
I am here. That's all I have to say.
Hallie Bullet with the battle cry and battle charge and storming into the Punk News Podcast. We're also here with M. Moore, news editor. M. Moore, what's happening? What's going on?
Third lockdown.
Are you feeling hopeful, negative, pessimistic? How are you feeling about third lockdown?
Not great. Hopefully people do what they're supposed to, and this is the last one.
Well, third time's the charm, as they say. And we're also here with a longtime contributor, but someone who has not been here recently. A mysterious stranger from the past arises and stakes his claim. We are also here with Chris Barrett. I guess Chris Barrett is a reviews writer and occasional news submitter, but I would say he's mostly a reviewer. Chris Barrett, what's happening, dude? How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Chris, what's it like to be back on the Punk News Podcast after, say, maybe two and a half years of being away?
Sometimes you get lost along the way, you kind of wander off, but then you come back home and you feel like you're where you're supposed to be. And I guess where I'm supposed to be today.
So are you making the argument that you can indeed go home again?
I've received a post-it note that you can, so I'll take it for what it is.
Along those lines, the listeners might know Chris Barrett is married to Sam Barrett. Chris, give us the dirt. What's it like being married to Sam Barrett? How's that working out?
Well, actually, the fun thing is that we are approaching our 10-year wedding anniversary and 20 years being together. So that's one good thing. And many good things is that she's a lot more awesome than I am. So as Punk News knows, she contributes so much and I contribute so little. So I could laud her and just jump on in every once in a while and throw in my 2 cents. So here's my 2 cents.
Marriage
life is good.
Chris, what is the key to a happy and successful marriage?
Wife's always right. And, compromise, that's it. Open communication, compromise. Literally, I want to say funnier jokes, but I have nothing but like truth here. Yeah. Just be open and communicative and don't be an asshole. So that's it.
There you go.
Solid marriage advice on the Punk News Podcast, people.
Guys, don't be assholes.
Hey, not to get too far off track, do any of you guys watch Married at First Sight?
I know Sam loved that show, the first two seasons, so I sat and watched it like a good husband. So,
is it what it sounds like? Do people have to marry each other not knowing one another?
Precisely.
That sounds like a great idea for a bad TV show.
Speaking of bad TV shows, let's talk about a great podcast. And that podcast is the Punk News Podcast. And you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We've got some mail this week. This is from Dave L. I know Dave L. If you've been to a Philly punk show circa 2010 to 2018 and you saw this big hulking dude with a beard acting as a bouncer, but a friendly bouncer, that's Dave L. However, I think Dave L moved out of the Philadelphia area, and I know Dave L a little bit. Dave L wrote in. Here's what Dave L had to say. I know you've been debating shows returning on the podcast, and I think a huge thing being overlooked is venue staff. Sound guys with experience will come back because that's what they went to school for. But no venue really has a full-time regular staff, tickets, seating, security, etc. And I know I've moved on, and I at least don't plan on going back, at least at first. So a lot of those things will be shit shows, either from being understaffed or under-experienced staffed. From Dave L. giving the forecast on when shows do indeed return post-COVID pandemic.
This is a really interesting point, actually, because I think we've talked about it. Like, I've been thinking a lot about how bananas shows are going to be when shows happen again, like to the point where, you know, not to be like the scared little old lady, but like I'm a little worried, like our show's going to be like as safe as I want them to be at first, just because I'm worried that people are going to have so much pent up energy and they're going to be actually just like going apeshit. And then this is an interesting point that like then if you're also talking about venues where maybe the staff isn't like their veteran staff and maybe they've got some people that like don't have as much experience. I don't know. Just saying. I'm still going to go. I'm still going to go to shows. But I think maybe I'm going to watch my back a little bit at first just till I like, you know, figure out what the sitch is, like figure out what the vibe is. Make sure it's not like a bunch of people that just need to like get a year's worth of like aggression out and a bouncer that doesn't nobody is doing is all I'm all I'm saying. I don't know. I think this is interesting insider information. What do you guys think?
That's actually a really good point about like the potential for pent up energy. I guess first thing, not to be the PC police. It's not just sound guys, sound personnel. There was definitely
thank you for the correction. I appreciate that.
There was definitely a woman at Webster Hall years ago in the studio, this really short young Asian woman who just did this like phenomenal sound at the studio for like when she did the sound, it sounded the best. And then I think she moved on to another venue. And I know there was like rotating sound people. So it was like kind of on and off, but it's not just sound guys. Anyway, I'm not going
to
go too much.
But I actually would argue that it is just sound guys to the detriment of the industry in that every sound person I've ever used has been a guy. And I think the male to female ratio in sound persons is way out of whack.
Maybe that might change, though. That might change post-COVID. We'll see.
I'm all for that changing. But I'm just saying is I would argue sound guy is correct to the detriment of the term. And that I think there should be more women in all those kinds of positions, but there just aren't. We discussed this on the last podcast with regards to like producers and stuff in pop music. It's all men. But right. Why can't women do those jobs? They certainly can, and they should. And they might add a new flavor. And honestly, I might even argue that in general, maybe sound women would be better than sound men, maybe.
I have to say, I mean, listen, I had lots of amazing sound guys and lots of like really crappy sound guys who were like completely checked out and didn't care at all about the sound. You know, it's like it's not a great like I don't have a great like swath of experience with female sound people because exactly what you're saying, John. I just like can really only remember one in like 20 years of playing live music. But like, she was amazing. We couldn't believe we were in like a little venue in Bushwick, Brooklyn, where I was not expecting good sound at all. And the sound was amazing, like truly awesome. So I don't know. That's my one person experiment of what it's like to work with a female sound person. She was rad.
I'm going to tell my funny sound guy story real quick. The vast majority of punk new shows we've thrown, we've had excellent sound guys. There's sound guy Ryan in Philadelphia. There's the guy that runs Philomoka. Eric Bresler that runs Philomoka. Amazing sound guy. There was sound guy Will down at Creep Records. But at one show we threw, and honestly, it was the worst attended punk new show for a couple different reasons. We had this guy. I think the guy they planned on having, like, didn't show or something, so they had to call in another guy. And this dude came in, man. And this dude, like, I'm not trying to be a dick, but like this dude was clearly a heavy smoker, and he like reeked of old cigarettes. Like, you could tell, like, he didn't wash his clothes, and they all smelled like horrible old cigarettes, you know. And he comes in, and I'm like, all right, so I'm gonna play the song, and then I'm gonna go on stage and talk a little bit. And by talk, I mean yell at the audience, and then we're gonna start the show. And he's like, all right. And so we're playing the music, and I go on stage and I start talking, and he's not turning off the music. So I kind of just like powered on through and was like yelling at the audience, doing my thing. And the first band starts playing and he's like still playing the backing music. And I'm like looking at the guy. I'm like, well, I should have said, can you turn the music down? But I just didn't because I didn't know what the hell he was doing. And then after the band was done playing, he cranked the music like up to like 11. So between every band, like the audience like was like so deafened, they had to go outside because it was way too loud inside. It was weird, man. Sound dude.
Oof, that's – yeah, I've definitely been to one or two of those shows, so I hear you. Hear you on that. And actually, there was one other point in that original email, just about, I guess, like – people not knowing what to do at shows anymore. And the other thing I was thinking is that part of like we're thinking maybe, oh, people might go bananas, but then also too I think about so many shows that I've been to here in the city in Brooklyn and all that, where, you know, it's kind of like people were kind of looking to each other for a cue, and I almost feel like it's going to be like that like the high school dance that you always see portrayed in the media or that maybe you've attended, where people just kind of stare at each other like, what do we do again? And then when everyone not being sure, they just kind of like wait, and then the people playing are be like, are you guys enjoying yourself? Yeah, we're just taking in the moment sort of thing. I almost feel like it's going to be almost slow where people are learning to do things again, or it could be totally the opposite where people just don't know how to act. And I think that's just a general society thing as well. People don't know how to act once lockdowns in certain places may end and quarantining is ending for other people as well.
Not to drag this out, but I've got two questions branching off this, and I'm going to throw it to M first. Mm-hmm. Both Hallie and Chris have talked about the concerns of people not knowing how to act. And honestly, at like punk shows, people are usually pretty cool, except for, you know, maybe sometimes you get like the street punk kind of guy that like thinks getting drunk and like, you know, just being an ass is cool. Or you get like the young punk that's like 16 or 15 and it's like kicking holes in the wall because he thinks that's what you're supposed to do at a punk show, which isn't really at all, you know. So punk is usually pretty cool. But like I said, I saw the chats like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago at this point, and the crowd was just obnoxious, like obnoxious. So the question is, M, are we going to have to deal with like people being like total dickbags at shows, like to a worse degree, you know?
I think it's possible. I think it's like it's one of two ways. Like, they're either going to be way worse or they're going to be like way nicer and just kind of stay out of everyone's way, you know, and kind of do their own things. Like, I've been to shows where pretty much everyone around me is on their phones, and then I'm not like the tallest person. So then people will like move in front of me, like looking at their phones, and then I'm watching the show from behind them on their phones. So I think there's going to be more of that, that too. But you'll always get a few dick bags.
What's the dick bag ratio going to be?
I don't know. Hopefully it's just going to be super. Like, I hope that like my being nervous about that just ends up just being like horseshit. Like, I hope it's just super joyous. Like, I hope shows are like a love fest. You know what I mean? Where like people are truly like having a great time and like, and everyone is enjoying being around each other. I think my fear is just that people are going to maybe just be so drunk and so high that they won't be in control of their behavior. I think that's like what I'm more worried about, you know, that people will just be like just out of control and more than like intentionally being like dickbags, you know.
Do you think Philly will be extremely out of control because that's how Philly is?
Yes, I do. And I wish I wish that your friend had been at the show that I was at in Philly where I got my freaking wallet stolen. Maybe a good bouncer could have prevented that from happening.
tell us this quick story. What was the story of how getting, first of all, what was the band? What was the audience and what happened?
No, it's not that interesting a story, right. But in fact, I shouldn't have brought it up, but it did remind me that Philly is, she is still a shady, she's still a little shady. What, you got to watch your wallet in Philly. Yeah, I had forgotten. I forgot to give her the respect that she needs because Philly will take your wallet if you are not paying attention.
Listen, man, it ain't Sacramento, you know. It ain't York, PA. You know, you know,
exactly.
Wow. Listen, he's under the bus right now.
and here's the second question. Chris mentioned like a high school dance. You know, in movies like American Pie, which is like a high school movie, but everyone is like 27. Like they have like these house parties that are filled with like 200 people in like a house, and they all have the red Dixie cup, and they're all like dancing with and, like the somehow the music's throughout the house equally, and like people are like going from this scene to that scene in the house, and it basically looks like a palace even though it's a house, and like it's like the craziest party ever. In high school, I didn't go to a single one of those kinds of parties. Ever, you know, outside of college parties at Penn State, the party school, I went to one of those kind of parties ever. Chris, have you ever been to an American Pie? Because I feel like I missed something. Have you ever been to an American Pie style party where there's like 150 people, the cops don't show up, you know, everyone's got the red Dixie cup and they're all dancing and having a good time and there's mischief abound? Because any high school party I went to, it was like 12 people in like the rumpus room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say, well, I grew up on Staten Island, so that is a I could go on all day about how strange it is Staten Island to the rest of the city. But it is definitely the most suburban place in the city. So I don't know about like 150 people, but I mean, I've been to some big parties. I would say anywhere between like 20 to 50 people. I've been to a few of those. There's also been like you know, bands playing at some of them. Like one of them, I was like maybe like 13 or 14, and there was
bands
like,
at a party.
Yeah,
my first
quick. I'm not gonna get deep into it. My first real like party, I was like 13 or 14, and all the other bands were like my age, and it was weird. It was like, this really happens. I was like an out of body experience for me, and it was about like 25 kids, and my friend's parents was hosting it, and there was beer and everything. And no cops got called, which was bananas. So it can happen. You're talking 150. Yeah, the cops will show up. Depends on the neighborhood. Depends on the people. But, yeah, it's possible. Absolutely.
Hallie, have you ever been to one of those parties? Do they exist? That's the question.
You guys, I'm straight edge, and I always have always been straight edge. And so, like, sadly, I was just like, no one was inviting me to those parties. I was like. Nobody wanted the straight edge girl like making them feel guilty as they like, you know, guzzled beer out of their red cups. I mean, yes, I went to parties. I'm not saying I didn't go to parties, but no, I'm with you, John. I didn't go to like, my point being, if there were big ragers like that going on, I was not them. But maybe they just weren't happening.
And more, I'm going to ask you that same question. And then I'm going to indulge myself and tell everyone the time my best friend Duncan and I broke into a frat house. And then ran out. And then we'll start the show proper, because this is what the show is all about. John's wacky anti-frat house attacks. Edmore, have you ever been to one of these parties with the Dixie Cups? I feel like I missed out on something.
In high school, there were a lot of like outdoor things. So like you go to someone's house and they have a fire, and then like it'll be three people, and then out of nowhere, like 10 people show up, and it's just a mess. When I went to school, I stayed in a residence building, and I don't know what was going on, but like my friend and I, like there was stuff going on all floors, so my friend and I got in the elevator, and the elevator was so crowded, we ended up getting pushed out on separate floors and had to take the stairs back to our floor. Yeah.
Oh my God. Sounds pretty rad. So listen. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Place to be. No, I was just saying it was a place to be. And also, I was also the non-drinking or any – John knows as well. I didn't partake in any of that stuff either. I just mostly watch people kind of fall on their face and be like, sucks to be you. Guess you really like that shit.
Wait, is everyone here basically straight edge? Is this a straight edge podcast?
I guess so.
So listen, one time, you know, Penn State is a party school, and honestly, it's a lot of fun. Like people say, oh, we report. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, honestly. And so one time, I don't know, like, we must have been freshmen, and like when you're freshman, you try to go to frats, which is dumb. Like if you're a guy trying to get into a frat house, like that's a dumb thing. Why? There's no point. You know what I mean? Well, I guess, you know. So anyways, Duncan and I went to this frat house, and we like snuck in a window because we want to pay like the $10 cover charge or whatever. And so we're like walking around, and like everyone's like looking at us. And we're like, man, we're getting the eye. Well, I mean, we were in the wrong. Like, honestly, if we didn't want to pay the $10, we should have snuck in. We were in the wrong, you know. So anyways, we were throwing a party down the beach that summer. And all year long, we were getting, like, island themed supplies, like a tiki bar and that kind of stuff. We had like plastic coconuts and stuff. And so like in one corner they had this big palm tree, like a blow up palm tree, like you throw in a pool. And Doug and I were like, man, that'd be like great for our party this summer, which was like 9 months away. And so like we need to steal this. And so I'm like, what we'll do is we'll deflate it and then we'll throw it out the window. And we're like, well, how are we gonna distract everyone? And Doug is like, watch this. And so he like there's like a dance floor. Actually, there are dance floors at like college parties. So Doug goes out on the dance floor, and Doug is like a pretty good dancer, but he starts like dancing like really energetically and like really badly. And like all these people are like watching Doug like totally flip out on the dance floor, just do like the worst dance moves. And so I run over to the palm tree and I pull out the plug, but it's not deflating. So I start jumping up and down on it, trying to like squish it down. And meanwhile, like Doug is like dancing like horribly, and eventually like the music stops and I hear like some shouting. So I grab the semi-deflated palm tree and I throw it out the window and I climb out the thing and I grab it and I kind of like start walking down the sidewalk, and then I see them like throwing Duncan out of the party, and like they're like yelling something, and then Duncan comes running up and he's like, go, go. And so we start running down the street, and that's how we stole the palm tree from the frat house.
You were really going for the TV mischief there.
So anyways, you can always visit podcast@punknews.org. And if anyone wants, the next time I can tell the story about how Duncan and I almost got in a fist fight with Bam Margera and his gang, or the time Duncan got slapped in the movie theater. Anyways, so that's
all of them. Didn't Sam say the last episode I was on, Sam said she said that the podcast was like we all sit around while Papa Gentile tells us stories around the fireplace. So I think we're solidly in that territory. I want to hear all the stories.
Well, we will get to them someday. I don't know why I'm wasting so much time, because we have got a ton of stuff to talk about. So you can always use a podcast at punknews.org. Somebody play a song and we'll come back and we'll hit the news proper. Chris, play a song.
All right, sure. I'll introduce the song. This was by one of my favorite EPs released from last year. This band is called Rough Francis. It's trying to be more conscious and reconnect with myself and listen to more bands of color. So this is a band of color. And this song is called Death Wire off of their EP Urgicare that came out in 2020. So check it. Death Wire.
I got my jacket, I'm ready. I wanna run a victory.
was Deathwire, and now that was rad. And let's talk about something that's not rad, but it's weird and possibly amusing. Michael Graves, former singer of the Misfits, second singer of the Misfits out of three technically. No, well, depends how you count. Second main singer, we'll say, of the Misfits. He was kicked out. Well, he quit the Misfits, I think it was like 2002, right around there. And since then, he's been a solo artist. And last year, he came out and he said, "I'm a proud boy, everybody." And it exploded all over the internet and actually caused his Instagram to get taken down. And he came back and it was a whole thing. And he was mad that Punk News covered it. And I had mixed emotions. So anyways, as it turns out, nobody knew this. He was at Washington during the Capitol riot on January 6th. And not only that, he was there to do sort of a DIY concert for a group called Latinos for Trump, which is a contradiction in and of itself. And so what he claims happened is when the riot started happening, he decided not to play the show, and he went away and didn't play the show and wasn't part of any of the badness, or so he claims. And to be fair, I don't think anyone's accusing him of being part of any of the assault on the Capitol itself. However, the defense. So right now, the assault on the Capitol caused five people to die. I think at least one police officer and some of the rioters themselves got killed, and there were dozens of injuries. And so there are multiple charges against some people that were part of the riot, including charges for trying to invade the Capitol itself. And also, I guess you could even maybe possibly, they might even be hanging. Oh, there's conspiracy charges, conspiracy to commit treason, I think, or some kind of conspiracy charges. And they might even try to hang felony murder on them for the murders. I'm not even sure. So anyways, the defense counsel is considering calling Michael Graves as a witness for the defense to make the argument that this conspiracy can't apply because there was no conspiracy, because the group was incapable of creating plans or contemplating plans to invade the Capitol, and instead it was just a spur of the moment kind of thing. Hallie Bullitt, do you think Michael Graves will get called in this extremely important trial as a witness? And do you agree with his comment that these guys have a hard time getting an order together for McDonald's, and therefore there's no way they could conspire to try to block the electoral vote counting?
I mean, I think, like, my understanding was that it's like it goes even a little bit further than that, in that I think what the lawyers are hoping that Michael Graves will be able to say is that he was hired basically to play this after party. And so, at least, again, in my understanding, it seemed like the lawyers are hoping that by proving that these guys were planning an after party, it proves that they weren't planning on overthrowing the government, because no one plans to overthrow the government and then thinks they're going to like just waltz over to an after party immediately afterwards. I don't know. I think maybe these people are that dumb. I think maybe they thought they were going to go in and hang Nancy Pelosi, and then they would want some great music to listen to afterwards. I don't know what to say. I don't know where this is. I don't know where any of this is going to go. And I don't really know this guy that this guy's name is Ethan Rufio Nordian. And I guess he's the guy that Graves would be coming in to testify in his defense. And I don't really know anything about what the specific charges are against that guy, or anything other than this Michael Graves angle. So I don't really even know what to think about it. I don't think it's a particular, if this is the best that the defense lawyers have, I think that this defendant is in trouble.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Hallie. And actually, the other thing too is that, first off, could I just first say that I love how, like, Michael Graves is part of a group that's like, we're proud Western chauvinists. And it's like, we're these great men, these great Western men of Western civilization that have imparted so much on people, yet somehow the same group can't get a McDonald's order together. Which is it? Could you not get the McDonald's order together, or did you impart great knowledge amongst masses of people throughout history? I don't know which way we're going with that, which shows the true testament of how the group operates. But at the same time, I guess, like, yeah, to what Hallie said, and I guess to everything that's happening in general, like, I think different people went there with different expectations. I think some people went just to think that they were just going to say a bunch of cool stuff outside or stuff that they felt was their truth, and then they were going to walk away. And then there are other people who came in for like an armed insurrection that they were going to overthrow the government. So, I mean, it wasn't all necessarily like one group going in, but the whole point is, you know, even the whole foundation, the base being where you think that the election was stolen, and I don't, you know, want to go down that whole political rabbit hole or whatever, but just more like that you felt that that these people that were there felt that this was illegitimate in some way and believed whatever lies that were being spread to them would make them susceptible to potentially do something. So, I mean, if you see people walking around with semi-automatic weapons or zip ties or whatever, I mean, that really should start to tell you something. If people are walking around with tactical gear, it's like, are they, yeah, they're just going to stand outside and say a bunch of stuff with their tactical gear. I guess they're used to seeing that, but I don't know. At some point, some people want to cosplay G.I. Joe and maybe, you know, be heroes in their heads and try and do a little extra and look what happened. So now it's like, oh, you know, it wasn't me. You know, I don't condone this. This wasn't really me and whatever. But, it's, you know, I had a chance to stop before. I didn't really have to participate in it, but they were there. So I don't know. No pity for Michael Graves. So fun fact, though, he consistently has played a bar on Staten Island that I've gone to for several shows, and you know, some people I know have put on shows and had him there, and I've made a conscious effort in the past, even before his whole Western Chauvinist thing, to avoid his shows. So
honestly, I would have liked to go see him like before his whole wackiness, like I don't know, but like those two Misfits albums actually are okay. They've got some, for $12, I would have liked to see Michael Graves before he went insane. I mean, he was probably insane then, but I would have went and seen it just to see, you know, if it's bad
to see the funniness.
Yeah. To see, you know, see a grown man in total face paint, but like, about it, you know. But listen, man, like, I don't know. Hallie Blitt. Hallie Blitt already gave her. And more, what do you think?
I think there's way more to this. Like, I think stuff's going to come out. Like, there's video of him, like, somewhere, you know, like, with the Iced Earth guy or something. Like, there's going to be something come out.
That's a good point.
And, like, stuff that I've seen, I don't know if this is connects to this case or not, but I thought that the organization, they like planned this on that that app or something. I thought they had like an app where they were like, oh, we're getting together on this day and bring all your stuff. Yeah, I thought they had like a kind of a loose plan going in, you know. But yeah, it is weird that he's like, oh yes, I am a member of this, and you know, look at us, look at what we've done, and then oh yeah, they can't even order a like a burger or whatever. Like that is just something else. But anyway.
Well, it is interesting that the defense is we're too stupid to do anything. I will say that I don't buy the statement that their possible defense is that we were planning a party for afterwards, so clearly we weren't planning an insurrection. I get that statement, but I don't think that really. I mean, well, I got two things to say. I don't think that actually holds water, because conspiracy does not require a day planning, a month planning, a year planning. All conspiracy requires is intentional, thought out discussion and or planning to do something before you do it. For example, if you're at a bar and the guy spits on you and you punch him, that's not a forethought. That's, you know, just a reaction.
Right.
But if you look in your wallet and you say, I need money, and you look across the street and you see there's a 7-Eleven, and you say to yourself, I can go rob that 7-Eleven right now. And then you go to your car and get a gun and walk in and rob the 7-Eleven. That's a forethought. That's intention, you know. And so it's the same rule for conspiracy. If two guys are walking past a 7-Eleven and they're like, damn, we need money. And they're like, there's a 7-Eleven. Let's go rob it. And they walk in 2 minutes and rob it and walk out after they decided to rob the 7-Eleven. That's conspiracy to commit a burglary and robbery. Robbery, rather, not burglary. So just because they in the past they were planning having a party, maybe they were at the thing and, you know, they're like, you know, there's more people here than we thought. A lot of people got guns. Why don't we storm the Capitol? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. So I don't know if that really defends them that much. But the other thing is, in any kind of big publicity trial, be it O.J. Simpson, be it this, be it Harvey Weinstein, so much crap that really isn't relevant. And honestly, I would argue should have been thrown out by the judge or not allowed to be presented by the judge is just because there's so many – like, is Michael Graves' opinion that he was going to throw a show really relevant as to whether the people actually at the Capitol had a conspiracy to run in and try to block the electoral votes? I mean, not really. It's just some jackass giving an opinion that doesn't really know anything. So I'd argue that it's really not even relevant and therefore inadmissible testimony. But that's not how these big things go down. These big things, like everybody and their mother comes in, you know. With the Michael Jackson case against the doctor, they had like the maid coming in. It's like what's the maid know? She doesn't know anything about medicine, you know. So I don't know. I just say it's purposely injected by the defense to cloud the issues, confuse the issues, that extend the trial, so people just get fed up with it and want it to be over with. That's my opinion. Okay.
I don't know. I think you just blew apart their defense, John Gentile. I think you should be on this case.
I should become they should hire me to be a special federal prosecutor.
I didn't know all that about conspiracy. I think you just blew this whole thing out of the water. Michael Graves, get out of town. You got nothing to add to this whole situation. Get out, man.
Like, John, we need you. We need you to cross-examine Michael Graves. I'll be there. All right, Michael Graves. Did you not suck when you sagged in the Michigan Relevance Council? I'm getting there. Anyway, Michael Graves. An ignominious end to the story of Michael Graves, but it's not over yet. So anyways, let's talk about something that is also polarizing, and I was polarized myself. Bite Me Bambi have released a new video. The video is for Like That, and in the video, basically, one of the it's four characters. One character is the lead singer. Her name is Talini, and it's three other young women that I believe are dancers, or professional dancers in the sense of dancing. And so one notable thing about this is off their new EP that was released like a month or two ago on a 12-inch record that was priced at $25 for a 12-inch EP, and it sold out immediately, plus $10 shipping. And so also Bite Me Bambi, as we've discussed before, this band that seems to kind of be popping up, and they're one of the bands on the quote the new wave of ska or whatever. I've had feelings about this. I don't know if anybody wants to start or someone wants me to throw out my feelings first.
Go for it.
This young lady is a very talented singer. The music is well done. It's competent. Just watching these videos, I feel as though I'm being put on. I feel as though very much like the Chats and very much like Amy on the Sniffers, and I love Amy on the Sniffers, I feel as though there's bigger hands, very much like the Regrets, I feel there's bigger hands behind the works. And here's why. Is if we watch this, if we listen to the song is pristine sounding. The song itself, I think, is not super exciting. I think it's pretty good, but it is extremely tight in that, like, the song sounds like it's been worked and worked and worked till it's a perfect pop song or pop ska song, if you will. The vocals are she's a great singer, but she does kind of the things that you hear on American Idol. She'll like go, she'll like trill A's or whatever. You know? Like, she'll do unnecessary vocal gymnastics, which I never am a fan of necessarily. Also, if you watch these dancers, these are all extremely good dancers. And you can tell that this is very much choreographed. Now, it's possible that, you know, some DIY person knows how to choreograph dance and knows a bunch of dancers and threw it all together. But when you watch videos that you know are DIY and there's those kinds of things, there's not as many camera angles. The film is not quite as crystal clear. The sound is not as clear. The dance moves don't seem as perfect. You know, I think back to a similar video. The Vivian Girls have a video called Take It As It Comes, which I love, and it's very much similar. It's Cassie Ramone calling Katie Goodman from her bed and they're talking about a guy or whatever. And it's funny and it's charming and it's not super lo-fi, but it's a little lo-fi. And you can tell these are punks doing, you know, stuff. These are punks trying to make a well-produced video, and it ended up being excellently and well done. To me, this appears to be strong hands making a video that tries to look punk. And not that I'm interested in what is not punk, but I do get squeamish when there are bigger hands at work that hide themselves. I don't have a problem with major label, but when the major label – and I don't even know this band is major label, and it might just be major labels are somewhat interested, or not even major labels. You know, bigger indies are interested, but they don't want to reveal themselves yet because they want to build up cred or any number of other reasons.
Wait, hold on, John. Let me help you out here. Are you insinuating that this force behind the scenes is out here to promote something bigger than what we're watching in Bite Me Bambi? Is that what we're saying?
No, you mean a Natty Ice or whatever? There's a lot of Natty Ice in the video. I think that's actually just for fun. Because they actually did a post on the Facebook today, said, we're sponsored by Natty Ice, but today's April 1st, so I think it was a joke. But I have the suspicion that this is very much like the chats and that it's a major label for working behind the scenes to test the waters of, can we make a lot of money off rock again? I will note that this video was directed by Chris Grau. Chris Grau is a well-known music video guy that's done stuff like NoFX, Rancid, and Bad Religion. And so he's not a super expensive guy, but he's not a brand new guy either. And so I don't know if I'm being too hard on this band or if my bullshit detector is correct. I think it's kind of good. I don't love it, but to me, it just seems a little too polished for me. That's what I'm saying, and it gives me a strange feeling. It seems a little too polished, a little too targeted, a little too. It seems a little too perfectly targeted to generate a certain feeling and a certain suggestion that seems so scientific. Most DIY or even low-level bands aren't capable of such precision. That's what I'm saying.
The last time we talked about this band, now I'm forgetting, but aren't a lot of the guys in this band, like, aren't they veterans of, like, third wave ska?
Actually, Callie, you were correct in that I just thought they were some old dudes, and they're not even that old, but I just thought they were some older dudes, but they actually are, like
seasoned people.
They actually are like guys in like Bowling for Soup and like a lot of those kinds of bands. Tellingly, though, they are barely in this video, too, I'll point out.
Yeah, it is. It's like they're kind of like, I don't know. It is like they're just like putting the cute young girl front and center and they're like, oh, and we're also in the band. But like, I mean, I think guys with those kind of connections and who've made professional music videos, I think that they could. I mean, I think that their version of a DIY video would probably look more polished than like a band that's like just start, you know, with members that are just starting out. Yeah. You know, they probably know directors that can like do a favor for them. I will say, like, I love that you were so impressed by this choreography, John.
Oh, is that good?
It's like, it's fine. It's like, I think that like I really think that like college girls in a dorm room could like have come up with this choreography, but I love that you thought it was like Britney Spears level, like amazing, like dancing. I mean, they're like, you know, I think it's possible that these are like old guys who like their bands got big at some point and they're trying to like throw a little bit of money into this, you know, to try to like get something going for themselves again. So I don't feel quite as like, oh, like I smell a major label behind it. I'm with you on your general take on what's happening here, which is like the song is cute. My God, that girl can sing. She can sing for good. She's like, she does kind of like the Gwen Stefani thing, right? With all the like fancy like vocal gymnastics. But yeah, it's just like the video's a little corny and has sort of like a limited view of like, right? Like isn't it like the girl in the video is so mad at her boyfriend just because he like canceled a date night? And then she does like all these like vicious things to like get revenge.
Yeah.
So it's like very much like a 90s guy's version of like a girl. So it's like trying to be very feminist, but it's like kind of not. I thought it was like fine, but also like, yeah, just kind of like a little annoying, maybe.
I'll second that 90s vibe 100%. Definitely watching that, I did think of something like No Doubt, but then also too, I guess what we trying here, fourth or fifth wave ska, something like that. I watched it, I'm like, I felt like I've watched this video before at a much younger age. But it's almost like trying to bring back a formula that worked in the past, but reintroduce it to a newer audience. So I guess for people like us who've seen it, something like this before, it's like, oh yeah, this is familiar. And I guess for younger people who maybe didn't grow up seeing this, it's like, wow. And it's kind of supposed to kind of hook them in. And I mean, like to both your guys' point, I think it's targeted for sure. But I, yeah, John, I think you read a little much into it in terms of it. I think it's just something that's more like you'll see this person on, you know, American Idol or like one of the giant shows, like then promoting them, because we know that those shows, you know, my opinion is my own, not Punk News. You know, we know these shows generally are just basically, you know, promoting soundboards, whatever. I don't know the appropriate term off the top of my head, for people who already have established careers and not people who walked in off the street, tried out vocally. It's like, oh my God, I'm on the show now. There are people who are like, you know, being pushed and it's like, oh, who's getting the most buzz? So, I mean, I could see it being like that, where there's someone keeping an eye on them and they'll be on something bigger if they like their path to something greater is definitely more paved and easier than, you know, a DIY band. So this is not DIY, but I don't know. I mean, it was formulaic and fun, you know, it was familiar, and I think that's what it was going for. So it achieved its goal.
And more, what was your stance?
I agree. It is really polished. It's insanely catchy. I listened to it once, and then I listened to other music, and then it kept coming back, and I'd only listened to it once, and I had to listen to it again to try to get it out, and that didn't really help, you know?
It became an earworm?
Yeah.
I love that.
not to drag out the conversation, but the Bite Me Bambi band is, you can tell they're really trying to make this pop. Are they trying too hard, and is there such a thing as trying too hard?
Actually, could I just bring up something real quick? There's another band that I just kind of got into, started listening to. They're on a label called Thousand Island Records called Drones. And it's also a female fronted, but not like a third, fourth, fifth wave ska band. But they are kind of going for like a big sort of punk, but sort of poppy, like Paramore sound, Tsunami Bomb. So I think that there's just kind of, you know, a thing where, you know, we gravitated, like pop music gravitated from rock and guitars and stuff like that. And I feel like that there's maybe a sense just with maybe some forces that kind of a way to reintroduce it is through like these bands, this avenue. Not that there's like some giant conspiracy, but just like kind of like a natural ebb and flow where things kind of become popular and not popular. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't think it's anything more than what it's just kind of like, what's old is new again. Think about it like with fashion, you know, all of a sudden like big pants are like a bigger thing again. Like I've see hipsters near my job. You know, I work in Bed-Stuy, you know, with like really big clothes again that I saw 20 years ago. So it's like the new thing again, but these are like 20-year-olds wearing it. So things come and go. So I think this is just something that might come, might catch, who knows, you know?
Well, here's something that is catching right now. Sincere Engineer, they have put out a new video. The video is for the track Out of Reach, and that's out via Hopeless Records. And it's a standalone single right now, and that suggests that they're going to release a new EP or new album somewhat soon. Hallie Bullitt, I believe you were a fan of Sincere Engineer.
Yeah, I feel stupid because I didn't know this band. And I like am so blown away. I feel like I'm like playing catch up here, because like I think this band is awesome. And I don't know, this singer is like everything. Her voice is so good. She can ride her bike with no hands. She has a tattoo of Norm Macdonald. Like I want her to run. This is like my Miss America. Like. I was super, super into the song. And yeah, I have to play catch up now. I have to listen to everything that this band has done.
And more, I think this was one of your jams, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. So this is their third single since they signed to Hopeless.
Did either of you, Hallie or Em, did either of you ever catch her live before lockdown?
No, I didn't get the chance.
Okay. No, is it so good?
Sam and I saw, I'm trying to think if I saw her once or twice. Definitely once out in Jersey at Crossroads. I want to say it's 2019 or something like that. And she is awesome. Definitely has kind of, she's funny in the sense that she kind of has like the, Because I believe she's from Chicago, Deanna, the singer. Because there's like the whole connection with like Alkaline Trio and Lawrence Arms, and like, you know, really like liking those bands and getting into it, and then kind of getting into the scene. She kind of has like that quirky Midwestern demeanor on stage as well, so it's just it creates like fun stage banter and stuff like that. So it just almost like, again, almost like someone you feel like you've seen a bunch of times, but just definitely like a newer, fresher face. And oh, just awesome live too. Awesome live, great last record. And this new song definitely is a step up in like a direction of like kind of like a bigger, more broad sound, but not like ew, like this is too polished or poppy. It's like just right. I'm like this sound is really hitting like what in terms of what she's doing. So I think she was on Red Scare before with Toby. So now on Hopeless, I think I don't know how that dynamic worked with what was being tinkered with here, but I'm looking forward to this record. I'm sure you guys sound like you are as well.
Yeah, John, what's your take on this band?
I think they're good. I think they're competent. It's just not my, I just can't get into the mildly melancholy alt rock kind of stuff. You know, I think it's, there's that quote, just because something isn't for you doesn't mean it isn't for anybody. And I think that applies here. Like, I think there's a lyric in there. It's like, we're so old, and I'm like, you're 26, you know?
You're the next generation, dude.
It's like we're going to talk about a band, I'm saying this band is a good band that many people enjoy. I'm just saying I can't really connect with it because, and I'm definitely not Mr. Posse, you know, Chain of Strength or whatever, but
you're waiting for the Guar part of the show to come.
Well, I do love Guar. Guar is great because Guar is like, humanity sucks, let's kill it all, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Not, I'm so old, my friends and I aren't quite as friendly as we used to be. Like I said, just because something isn't for you doesn't mean it's not for anybody. That's just not how I feel. But not every single piece of art in the world is going to talk to me. And that does raise the issue of reviewing, is when you review something, ideally, can you step out of yourself and not judge it as to what it means to you, but judge it, is this artist succeeding at what they're trying to succeed at? And is what they're succeeding at something worthy or important to succeed at? You know, and I think they excel there. And no one can do that truly, because it's impossible to be completely objective. But like I said, man, it's just not for me. But here's something that is for me. Crass. They just
Hey, here we go. We're at the John Dantilli portion of the show.
Crass just released over 200 remixes of songs off of Feeding of the 5,000. It's part of a whole project they ran all last year, and I guess into this year. Of course, as you know, Crass just re-released their entire discography as the Crassical Collection, and it's an amazing, probably the best review she's ever done. As part of that, they invited people to remix songs from the first album, Feeding the 5,000, however they won. And they said, we're going to pick the best ones and put it out on a 12-inch compilation. I think those plans have been scrapped, because what they seemed to do instead was do 4 or 5 or 6 12-inch singles with one song on each side. And most of those remixes are pretty famous people. I will say I was highly annoyed when I saw Steve Aoki did a Crass remix. I'm like, really? Out of all the people in the world, you give it to Steve Aoki? You know, but whatever. That's really more one of the indies. But then again, it's like, well, maybe that's smart, because maybe they should be trying to expand the world of Crass rather than just play to people that are going to buy it anyways or that are into it anyways. Which that's true. The Penny Room Battle argument would be like, yeah, people that are already into Crass, that's great. I want other people to know about it. I don't want to just talk to the same people over and over. So anyways, I'm getting off track. The point being is, so over 200 remixes were submitted, and Crass has made them all available. I don't know if they're going to take the 12 best ones or whatever and put on a 12-inch single or not. I will say I thought most of these remixes were going to suck, because I heard some of the early ones. A lot of these – I mean, I certainly didn't listen to all 222 of them, but a lot of them are really, really good. Some of them are just kind of unimaginative, but some are like really. There's a couple of reggae ones. There's some like dance hall ones. There's some dance music ones. There's some ones where they actually did a true remix in that they didn't like add material, but they just kind of made it sound different through emphasis of different instruments, which sounded cool. There's some other ones where they actually put in new instruments, like guitar riffs and stuff, but kept the vocals, which was really cool. Couple of takeaways here. First thing is, I do find this interesting, and this raises the famous question about is everybody entitled to an equal say? And so Crass famously put out Bullshit Detector 1, 2, and 3. And the idea was Crass, one of the biggest punk bands of the time, was going to put out a compilation of a bunch of unknown bands. If you send them a tape, they're probably going to put it on the record. And Bullshit Detector 1, 2, and 3 are very cool compilations. There's some amazing songs on there. There's some junk. This is 222 tracks. Some of it's mediocre. Some of it's not that good. Some of it's fantastic. But it's hard to find the fantastic stuff because it's 222 things. So the question is, when we give everybody an equal voice, does that pull down the shining stars? Or is shining star completely subjective? So that's actually a false analogy, if you will, or something like that. And more. What do you think?
I think shining star is completely objective because – John, like you were just saying, like, you know, just because it's not for me, it's not, or, you know, that doesn't mean it's not for everyone. So I think it's interesting how, like, you know, they open it up so everyone can have their say, everyone can do this, everyone can do that, and then they're, on top of that, everyone who listens to it will be like, oh, this is really good, and oh, this isn't really good, and like, who thinks what's good and who thinks what isn't good probably won't match up all the time. So I think it's really interesting and a really great way. It fits in with the band so well. So it's really, really interesting to see them doing it and publishing them.
Hallie, what do you think?
I just love the trend of, like, doing a little bit more, like, crowdsourcing stuff, you know. Pup has played with a lot of that. Like, even, I'm getting out of punk rock, so forgive me, but even like that, like, indie artist Grimes, you know, she's like done a lot of these videos where she, like, the video is her on a green screen. She's like performing, but the video she releases is just like her in front of the green screen. And she's like allowing fans to like fill in what the background will be. And like, I love this stuff. I love artists inviting their fans to get creative. I guess like I have like a nitpicky thing, which is like, if the artists make any money off of this, like, do the fans that did this work, like, are they being compensated in any way? So, like, I'm sort of curious about that. And then
I will add that with these remixes, any money collected goes to a charity to help out. I think I'll tell you in one second. Charity, here we go. Specialist support for women and children experiencing domestic violence with a national network of specialist services. And the world's first safe house for women and children escaping violence in 1977.
I love that. But in terms of your question, John, I guess I'm not sure how to feel about it, because, you know, it is like all these fans did all this work, and in a way it's so cool that Crass is just like, hey, like, here's the work that everybody did, and all of the people that put their time into this project, like, they all get the gratification of being like, oh man, that's so cool. Like Crass is like playing my shit on their site or on their Bandcamp or whatever. At the same time, you know, as a listener, it probably would have been nice to have it curated a little bit, you know, just because I'm not going to go through 225 tracks. So I guess, yeah, I'm on the fence about that part of it.
Chris, what do you think?
So first, I'd just like to say this. With Crass expanding their sound, this Crass album has been brought to you by Home Depot. Home Depot, where you get things done. No, I'm kidding. So in terms of the actual remixes, I guess to everybody's point, yeah, it's subjective. I mean, the purpose, I think if you're raising money based off interest in this, first off, if you give, like, listeners agency and they're willing to take the time to submit something, and then you take the proceeds or whatever, and then you give it to, you know, good organizations, then, you know, why not? Because then you're generating interest, you're raising money. I think the actual, you know, material on Bandcamp, the 220 odd songs, it's not really meant to be like, oh, this is like amazing. This is just meant to be kind of more participatory. So I guess so if you look at punk in general, like one of the things that I think draw a lot of people, at least drew me into punk, is that it's participatory. So if it is participatory in the first place, then, and people have agency. So what it is, they go to shows, they run on stage, they jump on stage, they talk to the band after, and, you know, they're kind of not like, you know, above and beyond. Like that's what it's kind of supposed to be. So if it's kind of what it's supposed to be, you know, you're going to get good and not good and somewhere in between. So if that's what those Bandcamp tracks are, that's what they are. But John, would you like to talk about any particular, was there any particular number of tracks that was interesting? Number 55, perhaps?
Yeah, honestly, number 55 really stood out, man.
It did it?
It's called Band from the Roxy, Back to the Roxy remix. And I just thought it was fantastic. I mean, like, all the remixes, man, it just, you know.
The name on that number 55, that Joey, is it Joey two times? Well, who was it?
The funny thing is the Crass listed as Joseph Gentile's Back to the Roxy remix. They put that in. I called it Back to the Roxy remix, but they put my name like no, John's demanding credit for this. So.
Hey, Joey Gentile over here. He gave me a Crass mix. That's right. Crass is from Bensonhurst now.
DJ Joey G.
Like, most people just called it like Cathedral remix, AD45 remix, and this was Joseph Gentile's remix. Thanks, but you know, but so listen, you can go to crass.bandcamp.com and find my remix of Band from the Roxy. The high concept being is Crass, after being kicked out of the Roxy, decides they want to broadcast their message to a more square audience. So they change their sound to a sort of early 80s dance sound, but keep the lyrics the same and to get back into the Roxy. So there you go, people.
So, John, one last thing.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job, buddy. Just want to say good job.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I wrote, just put that there so everyone could pat me on the back. So let's play a track. Emma, you got a tune or what's up?
I do. So this song was released earlier this year, and it's a standalone single, and it's from a London, UK punk band called Fresh, and the song is called Girl Clout. It's angry, it's great, and the vocalist, her name's Catherine Woods, and her voice is awesome. So this is Girl Clout by Fresh.
To say yes, no one
and that was Fresh doing a cool new track. And let's talk about the President of the United States of America. In case the listeners don't know, the President of the United States of America were a massive, massive, massive band for one album during the height of 90s alt rock being popular, if you will. He, along with Punk Rock Karaoke, the lead singer is Chris Bello. He, along with Punk Rock Karaoke, did a cover of The Clash's White Riot, and you can check that out at punknews.org. I've got thoughts on this. I'll just say, I think this was totally rad. I think some of the Punk Rock Karaoke's are kind of phoned in, and there's nothing that special here, but they're just having fun. Chris does a great job singing, and also, honestly, like, I didn't even get into the President of the United States of America until about 3 or 4 years ago when I got a CD EP, and I'm like, wow, all these songs are, like, really good. And then I got the album, the first album. The other albums aren't that good. But the first album, like, it's kind of punkish, and it's, like, just a really, really good album. The listeners probably know this song, Move Into the Country, Gonna Eat Me a Lot of Peaches. Like, that's President of the United States of America. And I thought this video was cool and rad, and I dug the song. And I've got a particular comment about Chris's visual performance, but Hallie, your response.
I know that there are punks that like swear by this band. It's just like, I don't know, when this stuff was coming out, it sounded like schlocky radio rock to me. It sounded like fake punk, and I've just like never been able to get over that. And like, you know, like they're like you, John, like there are people that I like that their opinions I like really respect that like swear by this band. And I don't understand why he has this like twangy way of singing when they're from Seattle. Just the whole thing seems phony to me. But you know, it's like that thing. Maybe I just got to like, you know, what I wish is that someone could like come to me with the Men in Black like stick that erases your memory, and they could like just erase my 90s memories of not liking this band. And I wish I could just like listen to it with a fresh ear and see if I like it.
Chris, did you hate it with the fiery passion that Hallie hated it?
I didn't say I hated it with a fiery passion.
Yes, Hallie did not say that she hated it. I will say this. I guess because – all right. So first, my lens of President of the United States of America – you know, I get when they were blowing up, I was only like 10. So for me and my point of reference, like anything radio rock at that time was like, oh, OK, it's kind of cool. So I don't have a positive or negative opinion. I just remember talking with peers my age at that time, be like, hey, you heard that Millions of Peaches song, or hey, Lump, or Weird Al made fun of that song Lump and said, what was it, Gump? Right, that he did a spoof called Gump. But as for this Punk Rock Karaoke video, I guess if you had more of a negative or somewhat negative opinion about him, cursing him potentially, then yeah, it's definitely not your thing. I mean, I thought it was fun. I thought it was exactly what it was supposed to be, kind of like corny, hokey, like. Okay, you're not supposed to cover – I'm not saying you are not supposed to cover The Clash in a corny, hokey way. It did kind of come across that way, so I could see how it could rub people the wrong way for sure. But I thought it was just like standard fun, like I'm going to come in and make myself part of this song and introduce my flair and you take it or leave it. So, I mean, it was fun. It's kind of like what I think Punk Rock Karaoke is and kind of is supposed to be. I think people who love The Clash more will have stronger opinions about that. So I don't have strong opinions on The Clash or on President of the United States of America. So for me, it was just fun. But I understand why people are going to have strong opinions about that, 100%.
Em, you are not tainted by the 90s wars. What do you think of this?
Yeah, the only song I know from the President of the United States is the Peaches song. And I really think I found that on Punk News somehow. So
the place to be.
But yeah, I thought the cover was really good. I thought they did a good job of it. They had good energy and everything. I read the comments too, and one of the commenters was like, is that Casper Baby Pants? So then I looked it up, and he's like a kids performer in it and stuff too. So that was just the best. So like, it'd be kind of neat if people like were looking it up and then they found this, and then it's like a great way to introduce your kids to punk music with somebody that they recognize or something. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, there's an interview where he talks about, he's like, all along my true calling was to do kids music, which honestly, like, I don't even know if there's a need for kids music. Maybe I don't have any kids, so maybe I'm wrong. But like I don't know if there's like there's songs like I like to eat apples, let's go eat some apple. Like I don't think little kids need that. I think you can just play them like Stevie Wonder or Queen or stuff that's not like, you know, or Nina Simone even, you know, stuff that just, you know, stuff that's not vulgar. But is intelligent. I just don't think there's a need for kids music. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is, you know.
Oh, God, John. I had this exact same opinion so strongly. I held this opinion so strongly until I had a child. And you have no idea how many times I have to listen to Elmo singing every single day. It is like, I thought I'll just never play kids music for my child. And so he won't know that children's music is an option. He'll only know that cool music is an option. And yet somehow like kids stuff, just like it seeps into their lives and it just takes over. I'm telling you.
Like people want to talk about longevity, like how to stay relevant, you know, after your second album. After talk to Elmo, man, that dude has been like recording tracks for 40 years. And he is still like top. Maybe he's got powerful friends. You know what I'm saying?
John. Also to Hallie's point, a lot of time these like punk like people who are involved in like kids music, it's kind of like one or two things where they either themselves like maybe want to increase their appeal, or I get or just the fact that they, you know, are partially like giving maybe parents something like where it's like, okay, there's some familiarity with this artist that I know, and I'll be more willing to play this and enjoy this with my kid than maybe just like straight kids music, or, you know, just trying to ignore kids music in general. And I think the other way I think about this too, as a teacher, because I don't have kids of my own, like I played Cuckoo Kangaroo for some of my kids that I was working with, and they seem like, I think, at least I've heard that they've been involved in like the punk scene here and there, and they look like dudes who are just hanging around Williamsburg and stuff like that. So they are, it's definitely more relatable and kind of corny and funny. And I guess that's how I see myself as a teacher, kind of corny and funny with the kids that I'm working with. So I think that's kind of like the broad appeal of some of these more alternative punk people getting into the music, not just like, I'm going to hit it big with this kind of kids album. It's kind of like, hey, I'll have a different audience with something else on the side, you know? And why not?
Here's a related question. Is it creepy when people without kids record kids music? Or does that make sense because when an adult tries to make kids music, they're writing it as an adult, but a lot of these people that are writing for kids kind of still want to be little kids themselves?
At least for me, the only thing I would rate, the only way I would look at it is, and not as a parent, so I don't have the parent lens. Hallie would be able to speak more to it than I would. For me, as long as it's like fun and authentic, that's what it is. If it's like try too hard and fake and like, you know, like this entirely different personality, you know, if you're able to tell that, then I guess it's weird. But if it's just like, if that's you just being like, because I'm just kind of like a big doof with the kids that I kind of work with. I mean, if that's just you, then I guess that's a good time. But I don't know. I mean, for other people, it might be different.
I just have trouble imagining wanting, like you can play music and like rock out to people your own age or adults or whatever, or you can entertain kids and speak like a kid to kids. I just that just seems weird to me. But maybe it's not.
Depends on your mindset.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. All right, listen, John coming out hard against the children's music industry.
Taking you're some just a shot. Killjoy, man. You just, you know, it goes back to what you were talking about Guar and how you, you know, why you appreciate Guar, because they talk about darkness and the end of the world, man. You know, lighten up a little, like go outside, take a walk, get some sunshine, man. Feel good.
Let's talk about Mr. Positivity. Dick Lucas and Culture Shock have released a new album. It's called Mandemic. Of course, I'm sure the listeners know Dick Lucas fronts the Subhuman and Citizen Fish. This Culture Shock album was somewhat of a surprise release. He only announced it like last month. And he's like, it's coming out in May. And then he's like, oh, wow, it funded a lot quicker than I thought it was. I'm putting it out now. So I was happy that Dick Lucas, did well on the album. I dig the album a lot. The first three Culture Shock albums are fantastic. I thought this was very good. It's very Dick Lucas-y. It deals with some heavy issues, but all, you know, in true Dick Lucas style, from kind of a funny angle, an amusing angle, I should say. But also, I will say, Dick Lucas, maybe some people were planning on trying to get some coverage in some other publications, and the fact that you said, I'm putting it out 3 months early, kind of threw a wrench in that. But maybe Dick Lucas doesn't care because he's Dick Lucas. And more Culture Shock.
Yes.
What's your stance?
More Culture Shock. The world needs way more Culture Shock. Everyone needs to listen to the band. And then it would be a much better place. Because then everyone would be on the same page. I love this. It's so good. It's so good. I have listened to it, I don't know, 5-6 times straight through in the past 2 days. So, like, it's just so good. And it's so good that it came out, like, early, because I was waiting, like, I was listening to some of the older stuff, and it was like, please, you know, drop another song, you know, and, like, checking it and everything. And then I was like, you know, oh, my God, the whole album's there. And it was great. It's just, that is joy, you know. It's so good. So I could go on, but like, it's just, yeah. What about you guys?
I'm truly enjoying how M and how she's explaining how much she enjoys it. Like, I kind of see you when maybe sometimes, I don't know if you guys do this, when you explain about how you enjoy something, you kind of maybe put your hands in like a, like prayer hands almost, and then put your face to your hands, and you're just like, oh, it's just so good, so dreamy, it's so wonderful. Like, that's how I'm imagining M right now, just explaining her true joy for Culture Shock. Like, I actually do want you to go on and explain more, but I get it that you kind of hit a wall, and you're like, I'm just going to talk in a circle, so I'm just going to say, it was wonderful, thank you. So, I enjoy your enthusiasm, that was just awesome.
Chris, what did you think of it?
I did not have such okay. That came off as negative. This is not negative. Let me rewind. I'll try that again. It's dope. It's awesome. I don't quite have the feelings that M has, like the strong feelings. It's fun though, and you know what? I like how they marketed themselves as something the world needs in 2021, and also relevant. I'm like, you know what? You got it. All right. Awesome. I guess that'd be a great time to plug that Bandcamp Friday is April 2nd. So buy it. That's it. Just go buy it. Go support them. It's awesome. Why not? Right? Hallie, I'll kick it over to you.
He's it's like Dick Lucas is just so likable that like, I just like sort of at any time I'm like listening to this stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, good. I'm so glad that guy is like making more music. That being said, I didn't think this song was like essential listening. But it did grow on me even as I was listening to it. So yeah, I don't know. Just, I like seeing nice, cool people, you know, still putting music out, you know, listen, John.
Yes.
Wait, before we get to John, I would like M's love for this to joust John's love for Gwar. Like, if we could put that in like a cage and just see what went out, that'd be awesome right now. So, I'm sorry, John.
I dug this album. I thought that was real cool. Dick Lucas, like, an annoying thing, not an annoying thing, but a thing that does occur in punk rock is punk rock deals with far out ideas, craziness, you know, things that challenge norm conceptual ideas, which is cool. Sometimes dudes go over the edge and get kind of whacked out and say whacked out stuff. Michael Graves, for example. And so what's cool about Dick is Dick has always been an anarcho-punker. He's never betrayed that vision. He's never done any BS. But he's been open-minded. He hasn't been, like, dogmatic, you know. And he's still – he's doing what he said he would do 40 years ago. And the cool thing is if you buy Culture Shock stuff or Citizen Fish stuff – like, it's Dick Lucas mailing it out, which on one hand is sad because it's like he's not rich enough to hire somebody to do it, and he's Dick Luke. He's one of the most legendary punkers of all time. But on the other hand, it's cool that he's still doing it, and he likes still doing it, and he's having fun doing it. So maybe that's the win. I mean, money isn't happiness. Happiness is happiness.
And or he's taking agency and actually sign, sealing, and delivering his own material to you. He's putting his own special touch. You know when you get something in mail order, and then occasionally they draw something stupid, or they write like a nice note to you? Maybe that's Dick Lucas's touch in the mail order. You know?
I will subscribe to that theory 100%.
There you go.
We got two more things. I'm just going to do a quick one here. Guar is putting out a 12-inch EP. It is Guar acoustic, and they re-recorded four songs. Fuck This Place, Gonna Kill You, I'll Be Your Monster, and The Road Behind. The first three are from their latest album, and the last one, The Road Behind, was from the famous Guar, The Road Behind EP, which was 1992. And when Otis Urungus was still alive, Fuck This Place is about the death of Otis Urungus. I love Guar. Guar is one of my all-time favorite bands. I could talk for 3 hours straight about how much I love Guar and how Guar is more intelligent than you think, and how you don't fully appreciate Guar and you don't understand how great Guar is, and you miss the nuance of the costumes. But
that's why you're not going to spend 30 seconds on this. I know you.
So. I love Guar. That being said, I, like many fans, have been struggling. After Otis Urungus / Dave Brocky died, it definitely seemed like the band was at a loss for direction. And you know, they had a tumultuous few years where their lineup changed rapidly. They even brought in a singer who didn't even actually make it onto any other record. And eventually they brought in Blothar, who's broke off from Beefcake the Mighty, who is not an original Guar member, but almost an original Guar member. And so the last album, I thought it was okay. I thought it wasn't quite as sharp as most Guar albums. I thought the songs weren't quite as good. It wasn't terrible. And it, you know, it's got to be tough. Like, the creative head is gone, so do we just break up? Or do we try to keep that vision going forward? And they try to keep that vision going forward. I would argue that they made some missteps with regards to maybe being too goofy, and maybe some marketing was maybe a little too ham-fisted. And I don't think this track is amazing, this re-recording. However, I will say Blothar is getting better at singing, lead singer. He was always a great singer, but as like a secondary singer. Now he's becoming a very good lead singer. And so I'm holding out hope for Guar. I thought this one recording, At This Place, was probably among some of the best post-Dave Brocky stuff. I just thought, not that I even like acoustic, and I think it's cool that Guar is doing, like, you know, just some random thing, because they've done random things. They did a Christmas single before, so they do wacky, weird stuff once in a while. So I don't have any problem with the acoustic aspect. I think if they did an acoustic album, it'd be too much, so I think an EP is the right way to do it. That being said, I think Guar is still struggling with the loss of Dave Brocky, and they'll never be able to replace him, I think. But I think they should keep soldering on, and it's difficult, because when the creative head is gone, you're fighting a very heavy and battle with waves crashing down on you. But I think they're pushing forward. I think they're getting better. And I think this is a step in the right direction, kind of a pause, a reset, a random thing before they come back out with, I guess, their next grand statement, which I think will be able to capitalize on the potential that they have with the newish and new members and Blothar as a singer.
Some strong opinions there, John, about yes. the hopeful future direction of Guar.
Yeah.
So. I mean, but did you enjoy the track? On a scale of 1 to 10?
7.
7 out of 10? Okay. All right. I enjoyed it. I thought it was, how should I put this? It was not necessarily fun. It was just a different take. It's not when you go in ready to listen to a Guar song, you're ready to either be entertained or you're ready to have like a 15-year-old bro wrestling match with your friends in the bedroom somewhere. And neither of those things happened with this particular track. So I had to reset my expectations, and I want to say I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it. I would listen again. I don't know if I'd go out and really give a serious deep dive into it, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it was like fun and weird, right? And like creative, and like why not? Like why not do like I don't know. I thought there was like a Punk News commenter that said that fuck, this place sounded like the theme to a Mexican Western. And I thought that was like so like exactly right. And I was like, yes, and I'm here for that. Like, if you want to cover your song, make it sound like the theme to a Mexican Western, I will listen to that. But like you said, Chris, like I will listen to it like once or twice. I'm not gonna like listen to it over and over again. But I thought this was creative and cool. Em, did you like this?
Yeah, I thought it was really neat. I never thought that they do anything like acoustic. So it's real, and it works really well. I thought it worked really well. It sounded cool. So yeah.
Wait, could I throw out one more question? And yeah, anybody could answer this. I know John will. M. Hallie, it's up to you if you want to answer this as well. Is this like the, you remember that 80s hair metal band Extreme? And they had the More Than Words song that everybody knows More Than Words as the Extreme song. Like, name another Extreme song, More Than Words. No, that's the song that you know them for. Could this be that More Than Words song for Gwar?
No. Because it's not like a love, it's not like a love song. It's not like a song that like a, that song was so popular because it was like such a funny love song, like so corny and romantic. And then if you actually listen to the words, it's like kind of just like a guy like getting a girl, wanting a girl to sleep with him. But I think just but I know what you're saying. Yes, it is. It's like they are like they've turned a corner. They're like giving you their like acoustic, softer selves. But I think just by the nature of the fact that it's not a love song or basically like insinuating like let's have sex, I would say you know, they're not comparable.
Of course, I tried for that reach. I tried.
Of course, Extreme, the band featuring Gary Cherone before he was Van Halen's third and least favorite singer. Okay, let's wrap it up with a band that, like Van Halen, has had many lineup changes and that people love no matter what. Direct Hit, they released a music video. The music video is for the song Hollow Comfort, and it was made by Ben Sargent. Direct Hit now is Nick Woods, Devin Kay, Moira Weaver, Joram Zaborski, and Logan Stang. The band released Crown of Nothing in 2018, and word is that they are working on some new material. Direct Hit, always a punk news favorite. People love Direct Hit of punk news. What did you guys think of this track, and what do you see the future of as Direct Hit?
Okay, I guess I'll go. So I like Direct Hit. I have most of their stuff. You know, full disclosure, like, you know, John knows, we've had conversations with this about this before. I like a lot of stuff that's come out on Fat Records and Red Scare. Direct Hit's one of those bands that seems to have like a real strong, fervent following. I'm not necessarily a strong, fervent follower of Direct Hit. I enjoy their stuff. I buy their stuff. I support them. They were fun to see live. That said, the last time that they came, that I remember them coming through, that I saw them, and it wasn't too long after Crown of Nothing came out, they had their current lineup with Moira Weaver as like another guitar, like backup vocalist. And I'm just, you know, just gonna put it out there, I cannot fucking wait for them for this album, because that lineup, like Direct Hit, was just, I don't want to undersell it, and I don't want to oversell it. They were enjoyable, and they were what would be like, is, you know, as John said, popular with the listeners maybe of this podcast or the readers of the site, kind of the quote unquote orcore sound. But adding Moira, you know, from like mixtapes and other projects, it's like, I feel like it's one of those things where you take two separate projects, you merge it, although it's merging into Direct Hit, and it's just made Direct Hit so much better. Like, it's added like a dynamic element that I'm here for it. I mean, I really like that song. And whenever they probably put this album out, it's probably the Direct Hit album that I'm probably going to keep in rotation and refer back to. That they, it had so, it, I enjoyed them live. They had a great, like, energy with each other live. I saw them at Music Hall Williamsburg a few years ago, whenever they came through. The time's blending in my head. That's what quarantine has done to me. But I mean, I don't know how other listeners have felt. And I don't know if Hallie or Emily, if you guys have any opinions about that. But it is so, so good, the direction that they're going. And I really think that they potentially could like gain a bigger following and write so much better music with this lineup.
I want to talk about this video.
Ah, okay. I got you. I didn't even touch the video, so I'm glad you're talking about the video.
Yeah, no, I like the song, but like I thought, like I just want to point out, like, people, this is how you do a pandemic music video. Like, don't have it be like sad members of the band playing by themselves in different like cubes on the screen. Do just something weird and like, you know, this video, I mean, whatever, just in case, you know, people listening to this haven't seen it. It's like starts out with some just like, it almost seems like someone's like flipping the channels in the 80s. It's just some whacked out like old 80s movies and like maybe like videos, like hairband kind of videos. And they're just sort of like, it kind of pans out. And then like what it pans out to is like an like animation of someone watching all this stuff, which is kind of like their head in their hands and they're kind of like rocking back and forth as if they're watching something so horrible, like the world is ending or something. I just thought it was like great and like, yeah, just an example of like the kind of video that I prefer to see during the pandemic. So I really, really liked that. John M, direct fan hits. What do we think of this song? Are we so excited? Listen, I just can't, all these bands we've talked about, I honestly can't wait. The ones that are going to be touring when the pandemic is over, like I'm going to see all of them. That's my final thought. I'm just going to see all of them.
Even Michael Graves?
Michael Graves. Like...
She's going to heckle. She's going there to call him out on his bullshit, as I almost wanted to on Staten Island. I'm like, nah,
I'm going to show up with my lawyer, John Gentile.
We'll like do some kind of like civil rights thing. It's like Mike Graves, you always say like people are trying to limit your free speech. Well, we're going to set up right next to you and talk about how much you suck. Anyway, and more. Final word and direct hit. Should we dig it? Should we hate it? Should we say it's okay?
I liked the song. I liked what they've been putting out with the new lineup. Like the video was cool. I liked the found like the footage and like the animation, but for some reason I couldn't watch it. Like it was just, I don't know. It made me uncomfortable for some reason. And like not a lot does. So it was really strange, but I really liked the song and I'm excited for them to release more.
Man. And you were like fine with that Mimes video, which I like could not, it made me so wildly uncomfortable. I was like itching. My skin was starting to itch.
I guess sometimes watching a video, you get lost in the music. And I guess I was watching the video in passing. I looking at it again, I see what you guys are saying for sure. It's definitely some interesting stuff going on there. I guess it's one of those where like bands put out a video and you're like, oh, I don't know. For me, I love music videos. I go through like spurts where I'll go on YouTube and I'll do like an hour or 2 hours where I'm just basically like my own VJ, like putting on music videos. Like I'm in this mood. Maybe I'll put on the audio for this one. Whatever. It is an interesting video, but let me step aside and not actually ask as a joke. But M, did you find the video more like just uncomfortable, weird, or did you find it to be like potentially like triggering to people?
I don't know. It was just kind of I usually really like like stuff like that. There is just something about it that just seemed kind of off to me. Okay. I think. Yeah. Okay. So it was just one of those things.
Okay. I thought about what you were saying. I'm like, I hope it's not something, because you know, every once in a while, there like a band puts out a video or someone puts something out, and it's like, you could really use a trigger warning with this. Like some people like take things differently and it's through no fault of their own. And it's just like, you want to make them aware of what they're getting into. So as long as it's not something like that, I guess then it is what it is. What would it be for that? So.
Oh yeah. It wasn't anything like that. No.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. Talk about that. For a second. Wait, am I missing something?
Well, speaking of things that will bewitch us and hold us rapturously with our attention, Hallie Bullitt, play a song.
You guys, this has never happened to me on the podcast. Em and I were going to play the same song.
What?
Oh, no.
Em, how good is that Fresh song?
It's
amazing. Like I like a lot of the stuff on Specialist Subject. A lot of it is really up my alley, but the song it's like really, really, really excited about. So I'm not sure what to play. Well, like I will say, I mean, I guess I don't have to play anything, but you know, this is funny. Okay, so my son, you know, he does make me listen to Elmo, but I also like I do still insist that he listen to cool music because I'm trying to shape him into being an awesome human being. So we do listen to my music as well, and he is super into this old Frank Black song. That's Frank Black of the Pixies. You know, when he released it as Black Francis, which is like how he releases a lot of his solo stuff. I don't know. This is Threshold Apprehension by Black Francis. And you can imagine with all it's like the lyrics are like have like the word whore in it. And like it's definitely not for kids, but my kid is young enough that I can get away with playing this stuff. And so, you know, just imagine my 2-year-old dancing around to this.
Talk to a man just to get a little word. Then you talk to the hand.
and that was Black Francis, one of my favorite fake stage names. Black Francis. Like when I read the name Black Francis, I think of like a medieval like plague doctor. Like, oh no, Black Francis is coming to town. You know. Yeah. Anyways, listen. We had a full house today, and then we had a fun time. And more. Any closing words for the podcast listeners?
Year of the Horse Part 3 comes out soon.
Woo! Hallie Bullitt, any closing words for the podcast listeners?
No, I'll reiterate those Bandcamp revenue-free Fridays. Do it, people.
And Chris, any closing words for the podcast listeners?
This is totally not punk news related, but it's baseball season, folks. So get out, enjoy. If that means that you got to sit on a grass outside nowhere near a stadium, fine. Inside, fine. If you are at the stadium, wear your mask.
And you can reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we will see you next week.
From the rock sea, okay, I never must apply there anyway. Said I only want it, well behaved, but do they think a dozen microphones are just fucking toys? Fuck them, show them to make my stand against what I feel is wrong with this land. Just sit there on their overfed asses, beating off the sweat of less fortunate class. Keep their fucking power, cut their fingers on the bar. Got control, won't let it be forgotten. Truth and reality, the wrong ain't ever come. Women ain't Belfast, that's no fucking fun. See you in the squaddy, lying in the front yard. See you in the machine gun, resting on the fence. Fighting the action, do your rap, my door's proud. Got a fucking nerve, I'm calling defense. Defense is tough as well as straight. Protection for the privilege that I had any late. Government protecting their province from the foe. Rich and unfortunate, shining like a dome. Fried down a bit of my ass a little more. Than the shit I get. 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 Defense, shit, it's not been left to war. And I'm up on a government, knows what the fuck is for. Bad from the rock sea, okay. 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 From the rock sea, okay. Bad from the rock sea, okay. Say fucking lies with depression frequency. Stay me out of current. Keep my life clean. Who's alive? Who's fucking alive? Who the fuck am I talking to? Who's alive? Who's fucking alive? Do you want me? It ain't me and you. Systems crash everywhere. School, I'm in church. Corporation deal. Back to reality, face the fear. Fucking conspiracy, I'm still feeling real. Wrong, I got me. Said it fucking wrong. I can't really remember that, but I've done it so. Bands on the rock sea. Okay, never mind supplying it anyway. Bad from the rock sea. Okay, never mind supplying it anyway. Bad from the rock sea. Okay, never mind supplying it anyway.